Emerging from the pandemic, the crunch in Maine's labor market. The help wanted signs are everywhere. All kinds of Maine businesses can't find enough workers, from restaurants to manufacturers, home health agencies to contractors. Some are blaming the enhanced unemployment benefits that were made available during the pandemic, saying they created a disincentive for people to return to work. Others say there are deeper systemic problems, and this situation has been a long time coming. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss the labor market in Maine with the commissioner of the Department of Labor and a UMaine economist. Who is not returning to work and why? Are you one of the millions who quit your job during the pandemic? This show is part of our special series on Maine's evolving economy as we emerge from the pandemic. Maine Calling is next. But first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Millions of Americans lost their jobs or left the workforce during the pandemic, and they are not necessarily coming back. Today, we will discuss the labor shortage in Maine and the reasons for it. My guests, Laura Fortman, who is commissioner of Maine's Department of Labor, and Philip Trostel, who is professor of economics and public policy at the University of Maine. We invite your questions and comments. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. A note here, this program is part of Maine's Evolving Economy, a series of Maine Calling shows about the pandemic is affecting Maine's economy. Commissioner Fortman, Professor Trostel, both of you, thank you so much for being on Maine Calling today. Commissioner, let's start with you and just ask some of the latest numbers. What do we know about the situation in Maine that we can measure? What is the unemployment rate? How does it vary county by county? What other indicators do you have that are giving you a sense of what's going on?
Sure. So the unemployment rate for the last month that we have numbers for is 4.8%, which is significantly better than it was a year ago. If you recall, at that time, we had a very sharp increase in unemployment. There was a dramatic job loss. What we're seeing now is a kind of we saw a sharp uptick in employment over last summer into the fall. And at this point, we've regained about 7 of the 10 jobs that were lost in March and April of 2020. So we're definitely on the right path. At the beginning of the pandemic, one of the things that was unusual was that we saw unemployment rates spike because that's where we saw the majority of job loss in Cumberland, York counties, where normally we have very low unemployment rates. And we saw that the difference between our RIM counties and our highly populated areas were not significant in unemployment rates. And now that we're seeing the jobs regaining, we're seeing a pattern that's much more typical of our usual unemployment. We're seeing kind of that stubborn unemployment in areas where there are traditionally fewer jobs and fewer people.
Okay, so
the
story
on the whole, we're recovering.
Yeah. Okay, and so Phil, as you listen to the numbers that Commissioner Fortman's giving, do you think this reflects the trends in the nation, or is Maine an outlier in some way?
Thanks for having me, Jennifer. Mostly what's been going on in Maine reflects what's been going on in the rest of the country. Unemployment spiked about a year ago, but actually the spike in unemployment was much higher nationally than it was in Maine. But so initially during the pandemic, Maine didn't suffer quite as much as the rest of the nation. But as the economies gradually started to improve over the dramatic contraction last spring, Maine recovered more slowly. So the unemployment rate in Maine now is below that in the rest of the country. But something we might want to talk about later is that labor force participation in Maine has not recovered as much as in the rest of the nation. So in a nutshell, the overall trends in Maine do follow the rest of the country. Maine didn't suffer as much initially, but we haven't recovered quite as rapidly as the rest of the nation.
Well, Phil, let's talk about that. Then the labor force participation, and this is another way of looking at the labor market. And I understand that even before the pandemic, there was a gap between the number of people in the age range that people are expected to go to work. What do you measure it, 18 to 64? And the number of people in Maine who might be eligible to work and how many were actually working. What do we see today, Phil, compared to what we saw before the pandemic?
Well, you're correct that labor force participation has been declining, and it's age 16 and older, by the way. But part of that is due to demographics. The aging of the population means there's relatively more retirees. And so Maine has had a little bit lower labor force participation rate than the rest of the nation because we're a little bit older. But the really curious thing during the pandemic is that labor force participation had a dramatic plunge in terms of the unemployment and what the apparent magnitude is. So for example, in Maine, the unemployment rate went from March to April, I think it went from 3.2% to 10.4% last year. So that was a 7-point increase and almost, you know, 2.5 times higher unemployment rate. And the drop in the labor force participation rate in terms of the percentage points wasn't as big, but in terms of the number of people, particularly as the year progressed, in Maine, there's been a bigger number of people leaving the labor force than the increase in the unemployment rate. So from the last quarter of last year to today, in my opinion, the bigger story is the reduction in labor force participation than the increase in unemployment. And that's unprecedented. There's the reason why we don't typically look at labor force participation is that doesn't usually change much when there's a recession. And this is a really unprecedented event.
Yeah. So let me ask you that, Commissioner Fortman, what do we know about who is not working in Maine? What are the reasons for that?
Well, first of all, that's a really interesting framing that that has been put out there. And I think that one of the things that we saw about this recession, because it is very, very different than anything we've experienced in the past, is because it was a public health crisis. And so what we saw was that kind of dramatic increase in people who, because of public health reasons, were not in the workforce. And a big, as we're looking at people going back to work, there are a couple of reasons why we're seeing barriers. And one is that childcare and schools, and I think I defer to Professor Trostel on this, since his area of expertise is really around things like labor force participation. But one of the reasons that we've seen increase in labor force participation over the last, you know, 20 or so years is because of women entering the workforce. And so with this pandemic, everyone went home, and then with schools closed or childcare not available, one of the things that happened was that women still have primary caregiving responsibilities. And so we were seeing numbers, large numbers of women who were dropping out of the workforce. And one of the questions is, are they going to be able to come back in? And it's not just childcare, it's also elder care, other caregiving responsibilities. And since this was a health crisis, a public health crisis, looking at that kind of interplay of caregiving responsibilities and workforce, I think is important.
I want to read to you a headline, Professor Trostel. This is a headline that is all over the media yesterday. I'm going to read you the CNBC headline. 4 million people quit their jobs in April, sparked by confidence they can find better work. And that's a record. And these statistics are from the Federal Department of Labor. Philip Trostel, are you surprised to hear that? And do you believe that that is what's going on here in Maine, that maybe some of the people who have won either quit their jobs or chosen not to return to their jobs are saying, you know what, this is time to try to figure out something better.
Wow, Jennifer, thanks for that easy question there.
I didn't know it was an easy question.
No, I'm being very sarcastic. No, actually, I was very surprised by that too. And it's a little too early to know, is this a statistical anomaly or is there something, is this a start of a really important new trend? I'm a little bit at a loss to say much more than what you said in terms of why that's happening. Now, of course, it could be because the labor market is starting to come back. And as you pointed out, it might be a good time if you do want to switch jobs to do it now. But that's really surprising. And one part of it, I'm sure that is contributing to that, is that the baby boomers, we're seeing the retirement of the baby boomers now. And so there has been, there's for the last 10 years, there's been a declining labor force participation rate for both men and women, which is, that was a big shift for women because they had been in working more, higher proportion than before. So retirement probably figures into that. And it does appear that retirement has increased substantially more than usual during the pandemic. So how much did that contribute to what happened last month in terms of quits? It's unclear just yet.
And Commissioner Fortman, I want to bring up another part of this conversation that's really a big part of the conversation right now. If you walk into a small business, if you have a conversation with a neighbor, people are likely to say, oh, people aren't going back to work because of the enhanced unemployment benefits, that extra $300 a week. Why would so-and-so take a job if they can make more on unemployment? Some states, as you well know, have stopped the enhanced unemployment benefits. So I'm asking you, Commissioner Fortman, two questions. One, is Maine considering stopping the enhanced unemployment benefits? And do you believe that this is a part of the reason that people are not going back to work, or some people are not going back to work?
So continuing with your trend of softball questions, Jennifer, it's complicated. There's not an easy answer to that one either. I think that the situation is complex, that there's no one simple answer. I think what we are seeing is we're seeing childcare concerns. I think that some people still have health concerns. During the earlier days, that was one of the reasons. Now that vaccines are readily available, I think people are coming back to the workforce. I see all those signs in retail and restaurants as well. That's a reality that folks in those sectors in particular are struggling. Employers are struggling. One of the things that we don't often look at is about, and Professor Trostel has mentioned it a couple of times, that we had some demographic trends that were here prior to the pandemic. And the pandemic has kind of exacerbated that tight labor market. One of the ways that we were responding in the hospitality industry prior to the pandemic was the use of visas. The last year that I have numbers for was 2019, and visas in Maine supplied about 24,000 workers in those seasonal jobs in the summer. And because of the pandemic, as well as some immigration policies, that labor pool has really been limited as well. So I think that that is a contributing factor. And I think for some people, the enhanced benefits may factor into their thinking, but I do not think that that's a primary reason. I think it's a complicated situation, and there are lots of decisions that people are juggling.
And 2 points about the enhanced benefits. So am I clear that Maine is not considering ending those early like some other states?
Yeah, have? We are not. We are not ending those early. They
and then
end
second,
on September 4th.
And Governor Mills was on the program last week, and she was talking about how some people may continue to receive those enhanced benefits if they go back to work, either part-time or some other circumstances. Can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. It would be part-time. Your weekly benefit amount is based on prior earnings. And if you are working part-time and you're earning less than your weekly benefit amount, you may still be able to get some partial unemployment benefits. We have a calculator on our website that will help you make that determination. And we are seeing people taking advantage of that benefit. And also some of the areas, again, hospitality, retail, not all of those jobs are full-time jobs. So this is a way to meet both the needs of the employers who are looking for some of that part-time help, as well as helping people with their wages, which are fairly low in those sectors.
Calling in now is Garrett Martin, who is Executive Director of the Maine Center for Economic Policy. Thanks so much for joining us, Garrett.
Thanks for having me.
You wrote a blog post about this topic this morning. I want to ask you, Garrett, what do you believe are the causes of Maine's labor shortage?
Well, I think there are a couple of things, Jennifer, and I think Commissioner Fortman and Professor Trostel certainly hit some of those on the head. You know, first of all, I think what most Mainers know is that seasonal shortages are not new. You know, you could Google worker shortage and enter your year, and I suspect you would find news stories about worker shortages over the last 10 to 15 years. And that is something that we are used to in the tourist season. It's not great, but it is it's a reality that we contend with every year as we sort of mushroom out the number of workers we need to accommodate those activities. I think the other thing, and this is really the most important, is the fact that there are structural challenges that predate the pandemic that were made worse by the pandemic and that we really need to take a hard look at. And I think Professor Trostel's point about the labor force participation rate, you know, roughly there are about 28,000 people who were in the labor force in February of 2020 that are not there now. And I think it merits a hard look at what are the reasons why those people have dropped out of the labor force. And I suspect that Commissioner Fortman has really prefaced those with the remarks about caregiving responsibilities and the fact that we've lost child care slots through the pandemic. We've had issues in our education system in terms of where kids are. And then our own research at the Maine Center for Economic Policy makes it pretty clear as well that people's access to health care and the need for support in that space very much affect their participation in the labor force. But the last thing I want to say on this UI claims issue, the unemployment insurance and the enhanced benefit, is that, first of all, it's important to note that unemployment insurance claims are really have been steadily declining. So people are trying to get back in the workforce. I think most folks recognize that these are not benefits that you're going to be able to count on in perpetuity, and that having a job is better than relying on those benefits. I think the other thing, though, that's important to note is that there's an inevitable lag that's occurring between these jobs coming back online and workers being ready to come back into the workforce. And, you know, if we ended these enhanced benefits, and again, as the commissioner indicated, they're only extended through September, it's not like we're miraculously going to address these issues. The fact that we don't have the child care in place that we need, that workers don't have access to health care that they need, that our demographics are the way they are, this is something that's much more structural and deeper than this simple issue that is, quite frankly, a canard in the conversation. And there's good research now coming out of the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco that sort of highlights that and reinforces that point. So very much appreciate your covering this, and I think it is an important issue for all of us here in Maine.
Thank you so much, Garrett. That was Garrett Martin calling in from the Maine Center for Economic Policy. We do need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear from some companies around Maine, and we'll have some of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from the Jackson Laboratory, where researchers are on a mission to cure diseases like cancer, Alzheimer's, and diabetes. Learn more at jax.org. And by Hardy Boat Cruises in New Harbor, offering daily ferry service to Monhegan Island and Puffin Watches. More information at hardyboat.com.
The U.S. wants thousands of offshore wind turbines up and running within the decade. But you know what? Building out on the water comes with some challenges.
It costs a lot more money to have a ship sitting there with a bunch of stuff on it. It is a more of a logistics challenge.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Why ramping up all that wind power is no breeze. Next time on Marketplace.
And you can hear Marketplace this evening at 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. The PBS NewsHour on Maine Public Television provides in-depth news and analysis of the issues that matter to you. It can be seen weekday evenings at 6, 7, and 11. The NewsHour brings you the top stories, objectively examined and discussed in depth with differing viewpoints. It's television news you can trust, helping to make sense of our complicated and ever-changing world. The PBS NewsHour at 6, 7 and 11, weeknights on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're discussing workforce challenges in Maine as we emerge from the pandemic. Joining me, Philip Trostel, UMaine Professor of Economics and Public Policy, and Laura Fortman, Maine Commissioner of Labor. You can share your comments or questions by email, a short email, please. talk@mainepublic.org, by Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now is Dana Connors, his president of the Maine State Chamber of Commerce. Thanks so much for calling in, Dana.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and it's nice to hear, although I didn't have the opportunity preceding this very moment, but having Laura and Philip on is, I think, is a great choice.
I want to know what you're hearing from your members. How are they characterizing the labor market in Maine right now?
Oh, very seriously, because I think that the issue is not one of demand, but clearly one of surprise of supply. I think that all of us have recognized coming into the pandemic, there was a work shortage. But coming out of the pandemic, which I believe is an apt description, is one that exacerbates the problem. And today, no matter where I go or what business I'm speaking with or the type of business, it is an issue. It's an issue that is one, again, it's up there. Work shortage as well as supply chain are both issues that today kind of haunts our recovery, to the extent that people would want and certainly expect given the demand.
Have you heard about some creative initiatives that employers are undertaking to create employees?
Boy, I have. I think, the same characteristic that we saw in Maine businesses during the pandemic to try to wrestle with the issue and to accept their responsibilities in terms of moving out of it and addressing the issue of the moment, I think you're finding the same characteristic today. When you look at businesses throughout the state and just about in every instance, they're doing what they can. Maybe it's a bonus. Maybe I've seen one or two companies that have offered benefits that they wouldn't have even thought of. Well, I won't say wouldn't have thought of, but they wouldn't have found themselves able to do it. But they're doing it today. When you look at our university, our community college system, you know, Thomas College, when you look at the Maine hospitality industry, you know, they've suffered. They probably in a normal year to the H-2B and the J-1s have probably, that's the visa programs, have probably in the mid-20s, they were short about 16,000. And so they created this program called the Great Maine Comeback, in which they not only recognize that we're on our way back, but we need your help as employees. And they put out a program of like $125,000 to really reinforce that. Even our trucking industry, I think the program is called Go My Way or something very similar in order to get people into an industry that has been suffering. Yeah, I think it's, again, it's I'm proud to say that it's part of Maine's culture to do what they can and to not shy away from the responsibilities. And I think that you're seeing that, but it's bigger than that. I mean, it's an issue that I'm sure that the participants today have spoken to some of the reasons. Like I said, we had our demographic issues coming into this particular pandemic, and we're finding it even worse today. And part of it, the prevailing attitude, I must say, is the $300 bonus that goes with the unemployment. But there are others that contribute to it. We've had two parents in the workforce. Kids are, up until this point, hybrid. So one of the parents would stay home. We've had the whole pandemic influence, whether it's an individual staying home for another family member or their own choice not to go back. Child care has been an issue. Personal choices that I remember one instance where this young man was working in a restaurant, and because of shortage of help, the hours got exhausting. So he went to a job that paid him less, but was more predictable in hours. So there's a myriad of choices and they all contribute. But I would have to say that the $300 that will go away the 1st of September is one that if you were to reach out to most businesses, they would say that that was the prevailing attitude.
Interesting. Dana, thanks so much for joining this conversation. Dana Connors with the Maine State Chamber of Commerce. Commissioner Fortman.
Sure. First of all, it was great hearing Dana, and you heard him lay out some of the complexity as well as the anecdotal information or the sense that people have that it's the unemployment, extra federal benefit that is causing this. One of the things I want to make sure that people know is that there is a provision that if people are recalled to work, there we have a place for employers to report that so that we can follow up on any of those instances where folks are refusing to go back to work and instead collecting unemployment. We try to publicize that information as widely as possible. And although we've heard lots of anecdotal information, I think it's very true that in their gut, this is what people believe. We have had very few reports that can be documented that it's actually a reason.
I'm going to go to Jack, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Jack. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a little bit of insight as to why restaurants are having some issues. I believe that one of the major issues is that after restaurants, I worked in restaurants for 10 years. After you get out of the industry and you find another position, you don't really want to go back. The money's great while you're doing it, but once you get out, you're happy finding a new life and a new norm. Another thing that hasn't really been mentioned during this conversation is the fact that the legal marijuana industry has gotten pretty large in this state and has absorbed people from the service industry. So people are clipping marijuana for, $20 an hour, or chefs are working and making, baked goods.
Interesting.
Stress. And then the third thing is that people are happy to stay at home, which a lot of people have mentioned due to childcare issues, or they found a new fiscal norm, or they have health concerns. But it was tight before, but with the marijuana industry growing as much as it has, it's just made the labor market have a whole nother industry with people that can be absorbed into that field.
Jack, thanks so much for that insight. Philip Trostel, thoughts on that? And then also I wanted to circle back because we weren't able to bring you in on the discussion about the enhanced unemployment benefits.
Well, that's certainly an interesting thought that the increasing legal marijuana industry could be soaking up significant numbers of jobs. I haven't looked at that, but I'm not sure that the marijuana sector is really that large to make that big of a dent. But anyway, circling back to what you were talking about earlier concerning enhanced benefits, there's quite a debate going on nationally about that topic. And when you see replacement rates, that is people earning more in unemployment insurance benefits than they were taking home from working, it's natural to suppose that that's preventing people from working. But there have been a few studies on this, not just recent, but going back for many years, because unemployment insurance has been around a long time. And the effects of unemployment benefits on the unemployment rate have generally been found to be pretty modest, not just prior to the pandemic, but the initial evidence during the pandemic suggests that, higher unemployment benefits do delay people going back to work and therefore make the unemployment rate a little bit higher, but they're not dramatic effects. And to further reinforce this idea is that last year at this time, there was an extra $600 a week in unemployment benefits. in addition to the usual unemployment benefits under the CARES Act. And that lasted, I believe, for 3 months. And when it went away last July, we didn't see a dramatic rush of people coming back into the labor market when those benefits went away. So extrapolating from that, we wouldn't expect that if we were to get rid of the $300 extra benefit right now, sure, it's going to have some impact, but the empirical evidence so far suggests that it's going to be modest.
We have a call now from Julie Moody, who's HR manager with SFX America. Julie, thanks so much for calling in. Tell us about SFX. Where are you headquartered and what do you do?
We are on Outer Congress in Portland, and we primarily focus on traditional and digital printing, document scanning, lockbox services. And our sister company, MPX, gives us a unique pairing with industry-leading technology and experience that allows us to service our clients, giving them the best of both worlds.
Well, you've heard some of this conversation so far. I'm wondering how what's going on now with the labor market is affecting SFX. Are you having a hard time finding enough people to work there?
Absolutely. All of the comments that your panelists and other callers have indicated, we are experiencing similarly. The other thing that I'd like to add is that we're finding now that it is requiring a higher hourly rate to secure talent than what we have seen in the past. And the speed in which we need to respond when we do finally have talent has increased significantly as well. And so we need to be quite nimble about getting folks here. And some of the recruitment efforts have included things like the employee referrals, but also partnering with organizations like Manufacturing Association of Maine, where we've been able to understand when other companies like Stanley Black & Decker or Deluxe out of Lewiston are sunsetting their operation, and we're getting in there to talk with these folks to be able to give them an opportunity to get right back into the workforce. So that's been one of the levers that we have been using in addition to things like job boards and temporary agencies, and being flexible with our hours and being as accommodating as we can be.
Julie, I'm really interested. I was wondering if people are bringing up their hourly rate. How would you characterize? Is it 10% higher? Or are you offering twice as much as you used to?
It has been north of 10%, and for, you know, on the benefits side, we have remained consistent with that, but we are looking at what might that look like during our next open enrollment. But absolutely, so from a granular standpoint, we would, a position that we would have paid, say, $15 an hour to start with, and we're willing to train, last year at this time, we're offering more like $18 an hour.
And let me ask you, as you think about what your company is going through and reading about what others and talking to others and those who also are involved in the Maine Manufacturers Association, do you believe that this is a blip or do you believe this is a shift, that this is the new reality going forward?
There has been a shift even in just meeting with people and what the workforce's expectations are. I think that there is the pandemic has altered, you know, you mentioned earlier about people that are wanting something better, a better solution. And so they're becoming much more selective. So I think that these shifts are going to be much more longstanding and it's not just a blip.
Julie, I so appreciate you calling in. Julie Moody is the Human Resources Manager with SFX America, which is based in Portland. Thank you so much. I'm going to move on to Larry, who's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Tell us your story.
So, Yeah, Devoted Health is a startup healthcare company based in Waltham, Massachusetts, and we have an operations center in Pineland Farms here in Maine. And we've been hiring over the last 2 years, and out of about 800 employees at Devoted, about almost 75 are here in Maine. We expect that number to be over 100 by the end of this year. And we have continued to hire through the pandemic. And I think this hiring shortage, the labor shortage, has really brought out the best in us. And I think it challenges, like your last caller talked about, it challenges all employers to kind of figure out what their value proposition is. And that's a lot of how we're trying to attack this issue.
Well, thanks so much for calling and sharing your story. Larry, calling from Falmouth with a company called Devoted Health. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Breakwater in Portland, inviting you to learn more about their day school and enrichment center, breakwaterlearning.org. And by the State Theater, presenting Patty Griffin and Gregory Allen Isikoff live in concert on October 23rd. Tickets on sale at statetheaterportland.com.
I'm Robin Young. The FDA approved a new Alzheimer's treatment this week.
There hasn't been a new Alzheimer's treatment approved here in the United States for almost 20 years.
Good news, but there are a lot of questions. We'll speak with two physicians, one who says he won't prescribe the new Alzheimer's drug, one who says she will. Next time, Here and Now.
Stay with us. Here and Now, upcoming shortly at 12 noon today here on Maine Public Radio. If you have an Alexa-powered device like an Amazon Echo or a Google Home Smart Speaker, you could easily find Maine Public Radio whenever and wherever you'd like with a single command. Visit mainepublic.org for helpful tips on accessing Maine Public Radio on your voice-activated device.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You are listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we're talking about the labor shortage in Maine and some challenges for companies and for those seeking jobs. With me, Department of Labor Commissioner Laura Fortman and UMaine Economics Professor Philip Trostel. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. If you're really fast, you can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. We're going to go to Daniel, who's calling from Ellsworth. Hi, Daniel. Go ahead.
Hey, yeah, thanks for taking my call. And I just wanted to say how much I appreciate Julia's point earlier about the moral decisions that often are associated with people's decision to leave. That was my story. I actually just left a job that I greatly enjoyed, but I was building multi-million-dollar luxury yachts for the ultra-wealthy. And with a lot of the systemic problems that we face being highlighted during this crisis, I just no longer could justify the work. So now I'm back to independent contracting, building houses, which is something we also really need here. But long term, I think that there are going to be these moral decisions that people have made, just given the fact that we have to take into account a lot of hidden costs that we don't associate with our GDP. And when we talk about the economy exclusively in terms of dollars, we were just listening to On Point with Magnetok Navarya and hearing somebody from our own Acadia National Park highlighting the concerns around climate change. Those are issues that I think a lot of people are taking into account when they decide what they're going to do for a living these days.
Daniel, thank you so much for calling in. And as Commissioner Fortman was saying earlier, myriad reasons that people are either changing jobs or leaving the workforce. I think, Daniel, you would show up in statistics as somebody who has left your job and is now, would you say, part of the gig economy, which ironically is what Maine Calling's talking about tomorrow.
I understand that's what you guys are talking about. That's what your screener was saying. I know I wouldn't say that I'm really a part of the gig economy. That's a term that I think is more associated with apps and services that people sign up for, like Uber. That's a way of classifying people as not employees so that those companies can exploit their labor.
So you're working for yourself now.
Yeah, I am. But I'm also getting paid a living wage now. All right. I was doing this same kind of work, residential construction, about 5 years ago. For 15 an hour. Now I'm getting 30. And, that's barely a livable wage. This is another point. All right, that's 30 before taxes. I pay 30% of every dollar to taxes. And we just found out from ProPublica not 48 hours ago, the top 1% of our country are paying nothing.
Right. Okay, right. Daniel, that's a main calling for another day. It's a good topic, but I wanted to turn to Commissioner Fortman. Hi, Commissioner Fortman. What do you think about what Daniel tells you? Are you hearing others saying similar things?
Well, yeah, I think it gets back to what is a quality job? And we've heard that from both employers and employees. You know, what is the value proposition for the individual and what is it for the employer? Employers are doing things like increasing wages, flexible hours and benefits. One person I heard as they were trying to build their own talent pipeline is that right now there's a responsibility to build talent rather than just kind of assuming that the talent is out there. So we're also hearing about expanding that pool of potential workers. And there's, you know, there are a lot of people who have been left on the sidelines in the past who now may be brought in, such as folks with disabilities, you know, older workers, what does being qualified really mean? But I think we are going through a dramatic shift, and it's going to take us a while to figure out how that all sorts out.
On the line with us now is Phil Rowland, who is CEO of AQuest Corp. Thanks so much for calling in, Phil.
Thank you very much.
Tell us what AQuest is and where you're headquartered.
Quick background. I'm on a board of the directors of the Manufacturing Association of Maine, and Lisa Martin, our director, is just an awesome individual and has been pushing at all levels of the state of Maine for better than 20, 25 years. And we, we're at a tipping point in the state of Maine. My company, AQuest Corporation, we're a 35-year-old firm. We design, build, install large-scale industrial air filtration systems. We clean the air. We save planet Earth. That's kind of our motto. We're tree huggers. We service New England, New York, New Jersey, PA, the mid-Atlantic states. 80%, 20% is national and some international. But in the state of Maine, real quickly, and I know you have time, I've been 35 years as AQuest. At 77, when I got out of school, I went to work for Honeywell in Portland, Maine as an application engineer. There were 50 paper mills. I'm from the county. Today, there's 6. The paper industry was devastated and is gone from the state of Maine, and the ones that are there are hanging on with the skin of their teeth. I have never seen anything like it in workforce in the state of Maine. I won't name names. 2 weeks ago, I was out down east at a major automated factory that should be running 3 shifts to make their product for the fall. They're 1 shift. They can't find workers. That afternoon, I stopped at another place that had, you'll know who it was, on a river that has 4 destroyers sitting that can't be finished. They're late for the Navy because they don't have welders. They're 550 welders short. In the afternoon, I stopped at another facility in Saco, Maine, and when I left, the general manager said, look at the sign at the end of our exit. The sign was from Sig Sauer in Dover, New Hampshire, poaching Maine workers for a $5,000 bonus. There are no workers. The companies are grinding to a halt. It is very serious. And then in the 14 high school Voc-Tech programs, at least the state has now taken some initiative in putting some dollars in there, where you got Marin Anacook High School that's spending some money on a wood shop expansion, on a welding shop expansion. Down in Machias, you have a group down there that are doing a nice school for kids that may be not in school. They've got a beautiful automotive shop, they've got a machine shop, they've got a welding shop, and they've got 55 young boys and girls that want to stay in the trades, that want to stay in Maine, that want to get a good paying job. So we can't live on tourism. I just that's my opinion. We have to have healthy manufacturing, and the Manufacturing Association of Maine has been leading that fight. We need to keep manufacturing, and somehow I don't know what the answer is on workforce development, but we really need to get young boys and young girls out of this idea of going to a college and getting a huge debt and then leaving the state. There are great, wonderful jobs. Pratt, Whitney, and Berwick, Maine is just dying to hire people. They'll hire kids out of high school. 1-year certificate program at Southern Maine Community College, they'll take them from there. You've got Chimbro up in Maine that set up a beautiful training center. They'll hire young people and pay them for a full year and train them for their jobs. So anyway, that's kind of like my hit and my background on that, but I really think that we exclusively, everybody from the state, from the feds, from the legislative point of view, from the state of Maine and Orono point of view, advanced development centers, Manufacturing Association of Maine, we all have to get together on the supplier point of view, because it really is frightening from a guy that's been around since, like I said, 77.
Phil, thank you so much for calling in. I can hear the passion. I can hear how you care about not only your own company, but the state of Maine. And you've made some really, really important points here. Phil Rowland is CEO of AQuest Corporation. I'm going to move right on because we have so many calls at the end of the program here. I'm going to go to Jennifer Morin, who is with Bristol Seafood Workforce Leader. And Jennifer, I don't know if you're able to hear Phil, but I'm wondering, would you characterize this crisis as dramatically as he does?
Yeah, it really is. You know, the workforce has been challenging really the last couple of years, and the pandemic just threw another issue into the labor shortage. And I think that we've seen the trades die. Historically, positions like maintenance technicians, class A drivers, those have been challenging positions to recruit for a while now. And it's getting even more challenging. I think that the more we can educate children at the high school level that they don't have to go to college, they can find a career without the debt. You know, the state of Maine, we know, has an aging population as well that we're going to be challenged with in the next couple years.
Well, Jennifer, I appreciate you calling in, and I am going to move along because we're so close to the end of the program, but that's Jennifer Morin, who is workforce leader with Bristol Seafood. And Philip Trostel, I'm wondering your response to what you're hearing from people who own and run companies in Maine.
Well, I could certainly appreciate the difficulty in finding workers right now, especially right now. And manufacturing has been declining, and because of the bad, there is a thinner labor pool than there was before. But at the same time, I kind of have to balk a little bit about discouraging young people from going to college, because I've studied this very extensively, and there's just overwhelming evidence that on average, a college education is way, way, way going to pay more than the costs. And, you know, we worry about student debt, and it's a legitimate worry, but for most college graduates, not all, but for most, they're going to make the extra earnings they're going to make more than compensates whatever they borrow.
Interesting. I wonder if that will change in the future, that as we see these manufacturing jobs go up and how much they pay, if some sort of professional certificate will change that calculation. I'm going to go to Torbert, who's calling from York. Hi, Torbert. Go ahead.
Good morning, Jennifer and guest. I live here in the Gold Coast, and what's happening here is a harbinger for the rest of the state. The COVID refugees, ironically, they're not poor, they're rich, and they're flooding our housing market, making it incandescent. When a modest home comes up for sale, the bidding is huge. No one with working wages could begin to afford it, and then it's knocked down and a McMansion is put up. This is a trend that's been going on for 25, 30 years in the Seacoast, but it's accelerating and it's spreading.
Sure. And Laura, that's just another piece of this puzzle, isn't it? As the cost of a housing goes up, there are fewer and fewer places for people to live that they can afford. We're seeing it much more dramatically in places like Southern California, but this is a real issue here as well.
It definitely is, and especially for jobs on the coast. So we see that one of the challenges in recruiting for hospitality jobs has been whether or not there's affordable housing in the area. So many employers are trying to package that and provide housing as well. The only other thing I'd want to raise around the manufacturing piece is that for jobs in the trades, apprenticeship is a wonderful training path to go on so that you can earn and learn. And then those jobs are high paying jobs and you do have a recognized industry credential. So I think there are multiple pathways to pursuing high wage careers.
Torbert, thanks so much for calling in. And we have focused in Maine calling on the housing market, and we'll do so again in the future. It is a huge issue. Very quickly going to Bob in Saco. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to make the point that even before COVID, back in October of 2019, for the first time in the American economy, we had more job openings than we had unemployed people. And that should have sounded a big alarm, because we have 71 million baby boomers, and we have, most of us have slid well into retirement, and we have a whole lot more that are going to be sliding into retirement pretty soon, which is going to leave a big gap in the labor force. And truly the answer to this workforce issue is immigration. Because if we're going to have some of these trade jobs being filled, we need to have immigrant workers and immigrant families come in, because the parents will be the workforce of today and their children will be the workforce of tomorrow.
Bob, as you're speaking, Commissioner Fortman is nodding. This is a conversation indeed we were having before the advent of the pandemic, and something you're agreeing with, right, Laura?
Oh, definitely. I think that there were issues before. There were strategies that both, you know, that business was actively engaged in. And we really need to be looking at how do we grow our population, and immigration is absolutely critical.
All right. And so I want to, boy, we are really tight on time, and so many people are writing in. Michael on Facebook says, there are three causes you folks aren't talking about: age discrimination, disability discrimination, and the question on the job applications if you've ever had a misdemeanor or felony. And Commissioner Fortman, this is something you were touching on a little bit earlier, is that this crisis, if you'll call it, this situation is forcing companies to perhaps some companies think about people that they might have, and let's face it, written off before.
Exactly. One of the things people need to do is really expand that pool of workers that they're willing to consider, and look at what does it mean for your particular job opening? What does qualified actually mean? I know that there are some applications that we even have in state government that say they want a bachelor's degree, and we're re-looking at that. Is that absolutely a requirement, or is that just a preference?
Sure. And Philip Trostel, to you, immigration, a big part of the long-term solution, but right now that's not going to help us in the year 2021.
No, unfortunately, the borders aren't going to be opening anytime soon for that. But the broader trend is an important one, in that 4 out of every 10 working age people in Maine are not in the labor force. Unless we could fix that, which with aging, I'm not sure we can fix that a lot. I think immigration does make a lot of sense, and attracting from other states is going to be a lot harder than attracting from other countries, I think.
Well, thank you both for such an interesting discussion. And I apologize to everybody who submitted a comment or question and we weren't able to get to it. Probably we will return to this because it's such an important discussion. Philip Trostel is a UMaine professor of economics and public policy. Laura Fortman, Maine's Commissioner of Labor. This program has been part of Maine's Evolving Economy, a series of Maine Calling shows about how the pandemic is affecting Maine's economy. Today's sound engineer was George Thomas. Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn produce Maine Calling. Tomorrow on the program, we will learn about the different ways that people are becoming a part of Maine's gig economy. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.